Well, good morning, great men and women of God. I call you great because, as we just sang, there is a greatness out there in life. It's a greatness that is found in God, and it is a greatness that is found in being connected to Him and connected to His purposes. And so that greatness is not something that we find in ourselves. It's not something we have achieved or done. So I don't call you great because I know you and I've followed you and stalked you and seen how great you've done things. I'm calling you great because God has called you into greatness, and that greatness is found in Him. And so because of what He has done, I welcome you this morning, great men and women of God. Good morning. Good morning. I was reading recently about something in New York City. In New York City, there are over 8 million cats. I know that's depressing, right? But there are 11 million dogs, so that kind of helps. Now, when you and I have a pet here that dies, we might go to a backyard and have a service. But when you're in New York City, the city of concrete, there's not a lot of opportunities for that. So the city came up with a plan. For $50, they'll dispose of your deceased pet for you. Now, one woman was very enterprising. She put an ad in the paper that said, for $25, I will come and take care of your pet for you. Now, here's what happens. When someone gives her a call, she goes down to the Salvation Army and she buys an old suitcase for $2. Then she goes to the home of the person, takes the pet, puts the pet inside the suitcase, and leaves. Then she takes a ride on the subway. She sets her suitcase down next to her and acts like she's not watching. Guess what happens next? So a thief would come by and steal that suitcase and run off. And she would sit there and go, wait, stop, thief. I love this woman's brilliance, but what I'm really excited about is imagining the thief getting around the corner off the subway and opening up the suitcase to find little tiger. And I heard that story, and I started thinking about us, and I thought a lot of people in life, including us, were kind of like those New York thieves on the subway. We grab what we think is going to make us happy, it's going to meet a need, it's going to fulfill us. However, we get it, and we open it up, and it doesn't quite deliver. What suitcases have you grabbed in life? Welcome back to the book of Ecclesiastes, or as I'm calling this first section, Breakfast with Grandpa. Reading this book is like sitting across the diner from your grandfather and hearing him tell you the stories of his life. Now, I actually was sitting in a greasy diner this week with some guys, and one of the guys said, hey, I just got to be honest, I don't feel like this book is like having breakfast with my grandpa. My grandpa was pretty straight-laced. He didn't experiment with a lot of things like Solomon did. I feel like this is more like breakfast with Axl Rose. Fair enough. So you may be put off by the analogy because you're thinking, my grandpa never did all this. But Solomon did. And he had a lot of wealth and ability to grab a whole bunch of suitcases. And what he's wanting to do in his memoirs here is to help us avoid some fruitless searches. And he wants to wake us up now before we realize too late that our lives have had little meaning. And so over coffee and eggs, he's telling us stories in this first section of the book. He's been telling us stories of his pursuits of the gain of life. Now, thus far, he's told us three different stories. He told us the story of when he tried to understand life through philosophy. The problem was the best he could come up with is that trying to understand life under the sun is like trying to grab smoke. It's just a mist. Then he tried enjoying life through pleasure. Maybe just being happy in life was the point. But he kept running into the law of diminishing returns, and he realized that pleasure just doesn't last in a world that's filled with pain and trouble. And last week, we heard Solomon share his story of accomplishment, but he realized that even his work, his legacy, is temporary, because one day, all that you have gathered will be handed over to somebody else. Well, this morning, what we're going to do, we're going to have one last breakfast with Solomon, hear one more story this morning about a suitcase he grabbed, and then we're actually going to move to and ask him, so what is the conclusion? What have you figured out after all your searches? So we're going to look at one more of his searches, and then we're going to find out what his conclusion was. And we're going to begin in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 12, about the middle of the chapter. You ready? He said, so then I turned to consider wisdom and madness and folly. What Solomon is doing here is he says, I began to compare the value of living wisely to living foolishly. And maybe the point of life is just to make the right decisions, to really live wisely and to avoid all the foolish, dumb things people do. And I thought, that sounds a lot of like how many of us live our lives, and it looks like the life of America today. This is why we go to seminars on how to handle our finances. This is why we watch videos online about healthy ways to eat and foods to avoid. And we buy books on how to have a marriage that works, or we go to classes to learn how to parent, or we ask our neighbor, how did she get her lawn to look so great? We're trying to learn how to make wise decisions so that we can protect ourselves and really enjoy life. And we're also trying to look at people who've made foolish decisions, and we're saying, I don't want to be like that. So Grandpa, was that it? I mean, was this finally it, the purpose of life? And listen to what he said. Then I saw that there is more gain in wisdom than in folly, just as there is more gain in light than there is in darkness. So folks, we may have a winner. Yes. Solomon says, look, I was searching for the gain of life. That's the question he's been trying to figure out. And in wise living, I found more gain than in foolish living. Now, that's true. I mean, that's kind of a no-brainer, right? The teenager who makes wise choices is better off than the fool who follows the crowd. The business owner who runs her company according to wise principles is better off than the fool who doesn't have a plan. Or the couples who make wise choices about what they eat, they're better off than the fools who don't. It's kind of a basic life thing. So that's it. Thanks, Grandpa. I'm going to make it my goal in life to live as wisely as I can. I'm going to learn what to do from wise people, and I'm going to watch people that are foolish, and I'm not going to do what they do, because that's going to make me healthy and happy and successful. So thanks a lot, Gramps. It's been great having breakfast with you. And we get up to leave. But then just as we do, Solomon grabs our arm and says, well, hold your horses. Because in verse 14, while the wise person does have eyes in his head and the fool walks in darkness, here's kind of the bottom line. I perceived that what? The same event happens to all of them. So what Solomon is saying here is, you know, generally, 9 times out of 10, more often than not, a wise person is better off. They have eyes in their head. They look at what's coming. They make wise choices. The fool walks around in darkness, can't understand why they keep failing. But then he says, living wisely is not a shield against the events of life. Wisdom cannot protect you from all trouble and pain and tragedy. Maybe you've heard this expression, the rain falls on the just and the unjust, right? So it's the wise man who eats and exercises can still have a heart attack at age 54, like the fool who doesn't. Or the wise person and the fool can both have their job downsized. They can't control that. Or the wise family who locks their doors at night could still get robbed, just like the fool who doesn't. The same event, he says, happens to both. Wisdom isn't a guarantee or a protection. By the way, I thought this would be helpful to point something out. Many of you have read the book Proverbs in the Bible. Now, Solomon also wrote that book. It's probably the greatest collection of wisdom ever. Yet a lot of people misunderstand the book of Proverbs. And the key to understanding the book of Proverbs that Solomon wrote is found right here in this verse in Ecclesiastes 2:14. And here's what it is. Wisdom doesn't guarantee protection. See, what happens is the mistake many people make when they read a book like Proverbs is they think that Proverbs are promises. They're not. They're God-inspired observations about what is generally true in life. So if you are reading Proverbs and you say, well, how do I know if I'm reading a proverb right? Let me make a suggestion. Add the phrase, most of the time, to the end of it. Say that with me, most of the time. Let me give you an example of how that works. You've all heard the proverb that says, train up a child in the way they should go, and when they are old, they will not depart from it, right? Most of the time. See, you're already there. You already learned it. Now, some people have used that verse and said it like a promise. Well, if you train up a child in the way they shall go, then promise, guarantee, when it happens. And so the problem with that is there are thousands, millions of disillusioned parents out there who said, wait a minute, we did train up the child. We did everything. We checked every box, and it didn't work out. And people that think that Proverbs are promises are stuck at this point, and they go, well, you must have not done it right. They blame the parent. Solomon is not saying that at all, because this is not a promise. It's a God-inspired what? Observation. What Solomon is saying is, hey, I've observed this. If you train up a child in the way they should go, when they are old, they will not depart from it most of the time. It's better to be wise than to be a fool. That's what he's saying here. So more often than not, go back to our text, wisdom is better than folly, seeing is better than walking in the dark. But Solomon says, wise living, it can't pass the test. It can't be the point of life, since under the sun, the wise person and the fool both face the same fates. And he goes on, he's disappointed by this. I said in my heart, what happens to the fool will also happen to me. And by the way, he's the wisest guy who ever lived, and it's going to happen to me. Why then have I been so very wise? I said this in my heart, that this is also a mist. For of the wise as of the fool, there is no enduring remembrance, seeing that in the days to come, all will have been long forgotten. How the wise dies just like the fool. This past week, Prince, the musical artist, passed away, and I was happy to be watching an NBA show where Charles Barkley was talking about Prince. So, you know, kind of a height of intellectual challenge. Barkley's commenting on this, and he made this comment. He goes, Prince will never be forgotten. Hundreds of years from now, they will still be talking about Prince. And I thought, I don't know if that's true. I like Prince. I think he was a great artist, but hundreds of years from now? Solomon's saying, you know, people die and we move on. And whether you were wise or whether you were foolish, life goes on. And you both have the same end. Wisdom does not shield the wise from every event in life. Now, again, you're probably better off being wise than being foolish. But even at the end of the day, if you're putting your trust in wisdom and your decisions and says, this is what's going to protect me, life is beyond your control. Well, let's pause here for a second. So, Solomon has talked about four different approaches to finding the point of life. Understanding it all, enjoying it all, accomplishing it all, living wisely through it all. Now, this is my opinion, so I'm just going to throw this out here. I kind of feel like his approaches have paralleled the journey of life. Think about this. As when you were younger, the question every young kid asks all the time is, why? 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 If they think, if I could just understand the why is life like this? As you get older and maybe you leave home, you begin to wrestle with that pursuit of pleasure. What is that going to look like? What am I going to do in life? As you enter a career and begin to get into the world, you begin to think about legacy and accomplishment and accumulating and protecting yourself. And then as you get some more years under your belt, you begin to look at some of the folly of all that, and you say, maybe I just need to really be wise and make decisions. That as you get even older, you begin to see that even all of this stuff is a vapor under the sun. Just an idea that maybe there's something parallel there. Well, Solomon, you spent decades and you spent millions of dollars trying to unlock the secret of life. What did you conclude? I hated life. This is one of the reasons why people say this is a depressing book. But I don't think what he's saying is that depressing. If you pay attention for a second, I hated life. Because what is done under the sun was grievous to me, for all is temporary and a striving after wind. What Solomon is saying here is, if you only look at life under the sun, it's grievous. Because in the end, everything changes, everything's a mist, everything's a vapor, it's gone. And if you're trying to find a fixed point in a world that's always changing, it's going to be like striving after wind. Have you ever chased wind? Have you ever caught it? So what is his conclusion? Well, I want to take a moment and I want us to reflect with God. We're going to pause right now. It's something we do. Kevin's coming up and we're going to do this at Pulpit Rock where we just pause for a minute. I thought this morning there was a reflection question. We usually put something up to reflect on. I thought there was a quote by the author John Updike that might be our reflection point today. Here's what he said. The fact that we still live well cannot ease the pain of feeling that we no longer live nobly. In light of our breakfast with Solomon, what do you think Updike was trying to get at? And is there anything that he's saying there that might nudge us to look above the sun? Let's pause for a moment and reflect on that together, and then we'll hear Solomon's conclusion. Many people have told me in the church and even people outside that the book of Ecclesiastes is their favorite book in the Bible. And I've been trying to wonder, why is that? Why do so many people like that? One idea, I think, is because Ecclesiastes is so non-preachy. Solomon doesn't say, for example, now, you should not sleep around with other people. Solomon says, I slept around with other people, and it left me unsatisfied. It didn't work. That's what I'm saying. Solomon is less dogmatic, and he's more pragmatic. It's kind of like the difference between having a conversation with your parent and having a conversation with your grandparents. You have a conversation with your parent, and they're going to say, no, don't do this, and do this, and don't do this, and do this. You could talk with your grandfather or grandmother, and they're going to say, well, you can do what you want. Here's what I've learned. Solomon has been there, done that, and his memoirs here share the good, the bad, and the ugly. And what I think people like about his book is his book starts where people are. It just starts with the questions people are already asking and then proceeds from those questions towards God. And in the end, Solomon is going to speak not so much with the voice of a prophet, but with the authority of experience. I think Solomon's book, Ecclesiastes, is a book for our culture more than ever, because I think people will resonate with where he goes that might have their defenses up in other ways. Just a thing. Grandpa, we've been having breakfast for a month now, and you said you'd tell us some stories, and you shared a lot of suitcases that you opened that you didn't find what you were looking for. What works? We'll go to verse 24, and this is the conclusion of his first section. And it's something he's going to spend the rest of the book trying to explain to us. He says, there is nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. Now, I want to remind you something. Solomon wasn't writing in English. He was writing in another language, Hebrew. And so we're reading a translation. Among scholars, there's some confusion over how to translate this. And the reason is because in the original language, see the word better? It doesn't appear there. It doesn't exist in this sentence. Now, there are times that Solomon will say there's nothing better than later in his book, and so some scholars say, well, we should put the word in there because that's what he meant. He just left it out, or it was the same thought. And other scholars say, no, he left it out. It doesn't mean that. So whether you leave it out or put it in, Solomon is saying one of two things here. I'm just trying to walk through this for a bit. He's either saying there's nothing better for us in life than to eat and drink and find enjoyment in our toil. Or he's saying there's nothing in us to be able to eat and drink and find enjoyment in our toil. In other words, what he's saying is the best we can hope for is just to enjoy our life. Or he's saying we don't have the capacity within us to really enjoy life. We're going to have to find that somewhere else. Which is it? I actually think it's both, right? I think it doesn't really matter because the next verses are going to clear it up in a second. Here's how I would summarize the first section of Ecclesiastes. If I was going to try to give words to what I think Solomon is saying the point of life is, I think it's this. Enjoy God and the life he gave you, but that does not begin under the sun. Enjoy God and the life he gave you, but that doesn't begin under the sun. See, if life was meaningless, as some people have said this book says, which I don't think it does, then what Solomon might just say is, you know what? Eat, drink, and be merry because tomorrow we die. Man, party like it's 1999. See that? I brought friends. There you go. He's not saying that. He's saying life is a mist, and so finding meaning and satisfaction and true joy in life is not something that we can find under the sun. And this is where Solomon's searches came up empty time after time. He tried to look under the sun, apart from God. He looked within. He looked without. The one place he didn't look was up. But when he finally did, he concluded, you know, the point of life is when we orient ourselves to something noble above the sun. This is what I think he clears up in the next verse. He says, this also I saw, this ability to enjoy life and God has to come from the hand of God. Because apart from him, who can eat or have enjoyment? And the answer expected here is no one. Solomon is helping us understand that everything we have is a gift from God. Everything you own. Well, I worked for it. I know. Your life. Your money, your friendships, your jobs, your home, your family, your bodies, your health, your cars, your kayak, your tablet, your pantries, your nation, your number of years on this planet. All of that comes from from the hand of God. Centuries later, Jesus' brother is going to say it this way. He's going to say, every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father. James says that. And Solomon says, not only is all of life a gift, but the ability to truly enjoy these things comes from the hand of God. And when we're connecting our lives to Him, we'll find joy. And when we don't connect our lives to Him, we're going to be missing out on something in life. It doesn't matter where we find it under the sun. What does it begin to look like to connect your life to God above the sun? Well, Solomon's actually going to unpack this thought throughout the rest of the book. In fact, next week we're going to start talking about, well, wait a minute, how can I really enjoy God and how can I really enjoy life when I realize I'm not in control of any of it? How do I do that? He's going to start addressing some challenges and how to live out enjoying God. But for today, I'd throw out a couple of thoughts. A friend of mine, John, whose birthday is actually today, told the story once of Scott and Kirsten. He said Scott and Kirsten were overachievers. They both had graduate degrees, and they were making the kind of money that put them in the top 1% in the country. They lived with their two sons in a community that was called the best community to raise a family. They thought they had figured out what life was all about, but they were living an under-the-sun kind of life. Just one day after another that offered no purpose or cause bigger than themselves or their suburban home. Their disillusionment started becoming disappointment, and their disappointment started becoming depression and even regret. Something had to change. And so there was a moment where Kirsten was reaching out to God, and she was praying, and she felt like she heard these words. I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not invite me in. I needed clothes, and you did not clothe me. I was sick and in prison, and you did not look after me. Well, these words were from a story that Jesus had told, that she had heard. And it spurred Kirsten and her husband to start talking about what would it look like to begin to change our priorities? How could we begin to connect with God above the sun? Over the next 5 years, they sold their home, they changed jobs, and they moved into an under-resourced neighborhood to live alongside people who were marginalized and forgotten. Scott became a school teacher in a poorly performing elementary school. Kirsten launched a thriving compassion and justice nonprofit that mobilizes thousands of volunteers. One of the most significant things they did, it was a big risk, is they moved their two elementary age boys into a school district with a bare bones budget, few extracurricular activities, and a growing gang problem. Scott and Kristen would say, hey, we've actually found out that our family has thrived, our kids have thrived. Kirsten said, we thought we were making sacrifices, but the truth is we're living a better life now than ever before. I think what's happening in this story that John was getting at was that Kirsten and Scott discovered there's an above the sun kind of life. It's a life of purpose. It's a life that gets you out of the bed in the morning because you know there's something important you're connected to and you're contributing to this world that's bigger than just under the sun. Now, I don't throw out that story to you to say that's what it has to look like. You don't have to sell everything. You don't have to move somewhere to enjoy God and the life He gave you. But when you begin to live connected above the sun, it imbues all of life with purpose and joy. It doesn't matter what you're doing. A sunset, a day of labor, a cup of coffee, a cool breeze, a conversation, watching your child sleep, waking early in the morning to tackle a project, defending the poor, protecting a city, giving your life away, rescuing the hopeless, burying a loved one, getting back up when you've been knocked down. All of these things can be connected to God, which all of a sudden begins to give them some meaning and purpose. And this is the orientation Solomon is calling us to. He's not saying that the point of life is necessarily to go and do this or go and do that. It is to be connected to God and His purposes, to enjoy God and the life He's given you. How do you begin to connect your life above the sun? Well, at Pulpit Rock, we talk a lot about the reason why we think we're here in the city, and that is to help people journey with God. The reason we say that phrase is because there are many people who are living under the sun, but they're not connected to God. They're not journeying with God. What our purpose here as a church is to help people connect their lives to God and His purposes. So what does that look like? Well, we'll see what Solomon says in the last verse of the chapter. He says, for to the one who pleases Him, God has given wisdom and knowledge and joy. But to the sinner, he's given the business of gathering and collecting, only to give to one who pleases God. This also is a mist and a striving after wind. I think what Solomon is connecting us to is he's saying, hey, there's really two kinds of people. There's the one who pleases God, who gets the gifts of wisdom and knowledge and joy, and then there's the sinner who is also given something. God gives them the business. What is the business they are given? It's living your life while leaving God out. That's the toil, living your life while leaving God out. Now he says something here. He says there's something about a sinner will gather and collect only to what? You see it? You guys all see it, but just not the front. See, you guys. What does that mean? Confession. I have no clue. I have been studying this and reading and learning and trying to unpack it. I'm not really sure what that means, exactly how that happens. Here's my best shot at it. Next Sunday, we're going to hear Solomon say that he believes God controls the times. God holds the times. He has a plan in life. If you live your life connected to God, you can be confident in wisdom and knowledge and joy that when you die, God was able to take how you lived and what you did and connect it to his purposes. However, if you just live under the sun with no connection to God, you will find after you die, the same thing will happen. God will still be able to somehow take your life and weave it into his purposes and use it for his purposes. So in a sense, even though you didn't want to live for God, God was able to take your stuff and in a sense, your life's work is given to one who pleases God. What he's meaning is your life was not used for your glory, but ultimately, even a person who says, I don't want to live with God, God finds a way to connect the puzzle pieces for his glory. In other words, you had an opportunity for nobility, but too late you realized that your life was a mist and a striving after wind because you were living life while leaving God out. And one day when every knee bows and every tongue confesses, you will stand by and watch as the meek inherit the earth, including all that you've gathered and collected. So if we want to live with true joy and purpose now, we want to be rightly connected to God. How do we become that? How do we become one who pleases him? I think it's as simple as saying this. We anchor our life above the sun. Now, in Solomon's day, they might have used some different language, but we now know something Solomon didn't fully know, and we know that anchor has a name, and the name is Jesus Christ. And even though the sons of man, as Solomon has described, turned their back on God, God never turned his back on us. Jesus Christ came down to walk under the sun with us and ultimately to give his life for us. And the Son of God took on the burden of the sons of man. And now he offers us a relationship and a connection above the sun. And if you're here this morning, which you are, because so you are here this morning. We're all here this morning. If you're not here this morning, I don't know where you are. We all have this thing in common with Solomon. All of us have been involved with fruitless searches. We've all looked for identity and meaning under the sun, and we haven't found it. We've come up empty. I wanted to close this morning by addressing this question. What would Jesus say to fruitless searchers like us? I think he'd say three things. I think the first thing Jesus would say if he were here is he'd look at you and he'd say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that life led you down that path. I'm sorry for whatever lie you believed about me, that I was not for you, or that I didn't love you, or that I didn't want you to be happy, whatever that lie was that made you run from me. I hurt for all the emptiness in your life that you tried to fill with philosophy and pleasure and achievement and even wisdom. I think secondly, Jesus would say, I understand. I understand your desire to be great and to find purpose and to be happy. I understand your temptation to find these things under the sun. I understand it because I was also tempted in this very way. I was tempted to find meaning in what I did. I was tempted to find meaning in what I could own. I was tempted to find meaning in what others thought about me. You can find that story in Luke 4. I was tempted just like you were, and I understand why you went that way. But I think finally Jesus would say, but I'm here to help you. No matter how far you've gone, no matter what you've tried, no matter what you have done in your journey under the sun, I am here to help you, and the door is still open, and the good news is still good news for you. And the good news of Christ is this: while we were utterly helpless, Christ came at just the right time and died for us sinners. That's the good news. And when we put our trust in that, when we believe that for ourselves, that is beginning a journey under the sun, connected above the sun. And there you'll find the power to begin to enjoy life in the hand of God. Next Sunday, we're going to begin, like I said, a new section with Solomon, because, spoiler alert, connecting your life to God above the sun doesn't mean the questions stop. It actually opens up a whole new can of them. Because he hinted at it here in Romans, Christ came at just the right time. What we're going to find out next week is Solomon actually believes that God controls the times. And for many of us, we have some big questions about that. We're going to find that out next week. But for today, I invite you to connect your life to God above the sun. Will you take the hand of God? Only Jesus Christ is the fixed point in all the mist of our life. And only in Christ can we truly enjoy God and the life he's given us. Will you join me in prayer? Father, all of us, like Solomon, have searched in vain to find some meaning and purpose in life. And if we're honest, we'll admit that we've never really found under the sun what we most need. And I love the fact that Jesus, instead of you sitting there wagging your finger at us, you are inviting us, just like you did with Solomon, to turn to you, to look above the sun, and to connect our lives. I pray this morning for the image of the hand of God above the sun reaching out to us. And we say, by faith, I will put my hand in his hand. I will ask him to forgive what I've done, and I will trust him with my life. And I will believe that while I was still helpless, he died for me. This morning, Father, I pray that we would take the hand of God and begin to learn and walk with you and understand what does it mean to live life connected above the sun. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.